Theatre proudly presents Fresh Ink, a festival of radio plays. Four writers were introduced to a cast and given 1 week to write a script in the Western genre that must include the following elements: the sound of a coyote howling, the sound of an ice cream truck. The play must include the line, "We don't need no stinkin' badges," and a product placement for either Casino Chico or Jennifer Parks, Realtor. This week's episode is entitled Bear Skin, featuring Allison Rich as Nadine, Lilia Chavera as Mara, and Tom Golden as Lewis. The play was written by Mick Moore and directed by Martin Chavira. And now, Fresh Ink, Episode 3, Bear Skin.
Mara, don't be on your phone the whole time, please. You know how Grandpa feels about technology.
Yeah, because he's old.
What was that?
Nothing, Mom.
Look, honey, I know Grandpa Lewis can be a little odd at times, but you know he loves you, right? Just try to be sociable.
Fine.
Fine? What does that mean?
I don't get it. I was supposed to be at Dad's cabin this weekend, and then Jade and I were going to go skiing.
Mara, I know that this may not seem like the most fun way to spend the first weekend of winter break, but your grandpa hardly gets to see you, so I thought it might be a good opportunity for the two of you to spend more time together. Plus, I get that your dad makes every day seem like a grand adventure, but your mom and grandpa can still show you a good time.
But Mom, you could live anywhere. God knows you could afford to live somewhere cooler than Chico.
Well, I grew up here, honey.
I know, but...
Mara, just try to make the best of it, okay? Now look, being out of touch with the younger generation is just part of getting older. I'd bet you anything you'll feel the same way about kids your age when you get older.
Yeah, maybe.
Who's got a hug for their favorite grandpa? Hot damn, girl. You just get bigger every time I see you.
Yeah, that's what people do.
And a smart ass too. Raised her well, Nadine.
Thanks, Dad. Good to see you. How was the drive?
Well, the rain kicked in on the 5 coming in, crowding up the highway all through Yuba City. And the damn heater on the Jeep is still busted, so the whole ride over was colder than a witch's tit.
Dad! Here. Let me take your coat. Dinner should be ready soon.
Oh, glad to hear it. I'm starving. How about you, kiddo?
Yeah, I could eat.
Wonderful dinner. Nadine, honey, you're gonna have to roll me out of here for sure.
Of course. Glad you can make it. Right, Mara?
Yeah. Good to see you too, Grandpa Lewis.
Mara, I said no more phone. And change that ringtone. It's creepy.
Sheesh, it's really coming down out there. So, kiddo, how's school going?
Fine. And don't call me kiddo.
Oh, sorry. Do you like your classes?
I guess.
Look, Mara, now I know you and I don't know each other very well, and God knows 40 years is a big age difference. So let's try this. How about you ask me some questions?
You're a writer, yeah?
I was, just like your mom. Westerns, mostly.
Cool, like cowboy stuff?
Yeah, cowboy stuff. I've loved them ever since I saw Treasure of the Sierra Madre. You know, we don't need no stinking patches. Well, anyway, you may have heard of some of my books. A couple got made into movies, even. Two Guns for Tom Stuckey, the Broken Horse Trilogy. Any of these ring a bell?
Nope, don't think so.
Kids these days.
Well, I like movies. I just haven't watched a lot of Westerns.
Okay. So that's all you want to ask your dear old granddad?
So you wrote some books. Did you make a lot of money from that?
Hell no. At least not until I sold the movie rights. Even then, the producer screwed me over in the long run. Should have asked for a cut of the box office receipts, lying bastards.
But you've got a lot of money, right?
I mean, I make ends meet, sweetheart.
Mom said you guys moved around a lot when she was a kid.
Well, we invested a lot, too. I gambled at the Casino Chico occasionally.
She said they were always really nice places you lived in, too.
Mara, honey, what's this all about? Why do you want to know so much about money?
I don't know. It's stupid. Forget it.
Dad, you want a glass of wine?
I'll take a whiskey if you got it.
What are you guys talking about?
Your daughter is just as inquisitive as you are, if not more.
What do you mean?
She wants to know about the family fortune.
Oh, Dad, please.
Nadine, it's all right. Besides, you were younger when she was, when you heard the story.
There's a story?
Honestly, you guys, it's not... She doesn't need to hear this.
Oh, there's a story, all right. Nadine, please, it's fine. You got a big, tough young lady there. She can take it.
Yeah, Mom. It's cool. Just chill out.
All right.
All right, then. Now, Mara, I'm guessing you've learned about the Civil War in school?
Yeah.
Don't worry. Your family, the Broadbecks, fought for the North. Union boys, through and through.
Well, that's a relief.
This story concerns a night in the rain, much like the one we're having outside tonight. The kind where the drops are the size of grapes and visibility goes down to near nothing. No wind either, just rain hammering down on the earth like it was owed a vengeance. The pounding becomes deafening, and a few feet in front of you, there could be anything crouching in the dark, ready to stick a knife or a fang into you, and you wouldn't see it or hear it until it was too late. The Broadbeck clan, so far as I know, or anyone thought worth mentioning, started in earnest with your great-grandfather, Captain Luther Broadbeck. Old Luther kissed the pregnant belly of his wife, Maureen, hoisted his pack, and went off to go fight Johnny Reb. Luther did well in the army. He was a real monster of a man, well over 6 feet tall, with a chest like a redwood trunk, gnarled black hair and arms that could crush a man's ribs with a well-placed hug. Back home, the townies were prone to calling him Luther Broadchest on account of his beastly size. But in the army, Luther became fond of wearing a great black bearskin across his shoulders, giving him a most fearsome appearance. Most Rebs on the battlefield wouldn't even go near him. Eventually, this brought his fellow soldiers to dub him Bearskin Broadback. So it was 1865 and the war was over. Luther's company disbanded and began the long journey home to the California Territory. As was his way, Luther took his own route home, as opposed to hitching up with his fellow soldiers. One evening, well on the other side of the country, Luther Broadbeck found himself caught in the mountains before a storm. After trekking through the wilderness for some time, with daylight fading fast, he decided to make camp. As Luther built his lean-to, his knuckles white and throbbing from the cold, he thought of his life and prospects now that the war had ended. He thought of Maureen waiting for him at home, newborn likely at her breast, waiting for her man to stroll up the trail to their humble cabin. Luther was hardly what you would call a bright man. Neither he nor his had ever known monetary comfort, had barely two bits of copper to rub together. He feared what vocation he might undertake, how he would feed that little one if he ever got off that frozen ridge. He managed a humble campfire and huddled close to its comforting flames. It was then that a noise caught his attention. The critters in the brush were making quite a fuss, and Luther brought his rifle close to him as a shape materialized from the dark edge of his camp. "Who goes there?" Luther hollered into the darkness, and a chilling voice replied with a hiss.
"No need for iron, friend. Just another traveler seeking warmth for its bones."
The brush pulled back, and a stranger emerged into the dim firelight, clad in a muddy duster and a wide-brimmed hat pulled down over their eyes. In their right hand, the stranger flipped a few coins between its long, spindly fingers. They pulled up the sides of their coat.
"You see, I've got no weapons, friend. Just a humble traveler seeking shelter and company."
Luther thought over the prospect. It had been weeks since he'd seen another human being. "All right, friend," he said. "Care for some beans?" Lit by the dwindling fire pit, the pair chatted for some time. Eventually, the subject came to family. "I've got me a wife at home," Luther said. "Thousands of miles away, waiting for me. Probably got a little one crawling around by now, too. How about yourself?"
"No family."
"Friends?"
"Oh, so many."
"All right, then." Luther was disturbed by the stranger, to say the least, but didn't want to be a rude host. He tried to stare hungrily at the coins that the stranger kept flipping between its fingers. "Coming to some coin, friend?"
"Perhaps. So will you, if you wish."
Don't quite catch your meaning, Luther said. It was then that the stranger took from its coat a heavy satchel, and Luther could tell it was littered with coins. The stranger tossed the purse at Luther's feet, and it made a jingling thud as it hit the dirt.
It's yours, friend.
Oh, I can't take your money, Luther said, but his eyes were widening at the girth of this small fortune, the gold coins glinting from the firelight.
Don't worry, friend. It's not a gift. It's a trade.
A trade?
Of course. One traveler to another.
And that's when the bargain was struck. The stranger told Luther that the bag of gold would never empty. No matter how much he spent, it would always refill. It was his if he could follow the instructions.
What instructions?
Luther was told that for 7 years he could not bathe or trim his hair or cut his nails, and he could never take off his signature bearskin. If at the end of the 7 years he had followed each condition to the letter, he could keep the ever-filling bag of gold.
And what if he didn't?
Then he had to forfeit his soul.
Oh, Jesus, Dad.
Shh, Mom. I'm listening.
See, Nadine, she wants to hear the rest of it. So for 7 years, Luther Broadbeck walked the land with a never-ending supply of gold in his purse. For some time, he went from saloon to gambling house to tavern, indulging in all the pleasures of life he was never able to satisfy before. He drank and gambled and lusted, and the purse would always refill. But after a time, things began to change for Luther. In his long and belated journey home, engaging in every vice imaginable along the way, Luther didn't wash or groom himself in any way. Even compared to the lack of hygiene typical of the men of his time, Luther began to stand out. His smell became unbearable and would anger any dog or horse he came into contact with. His black hair grew long and wild, thickly matted and covering his body. His nails grew too, yellowing into jagged talons that hung from his fingertips. His appearance became so frightening, in fact, that Luther began to see a change in the people he encountered. No matter how many coins he threw, folks would cower in his presence. Or worse, they became startled to the point of anger. Soon, no innkeeper would admit him. No woman would give him attention except primal revulsion. He'd slap coin after coin on the counter of many a saloon, but his smell and ghastly appearance would see him turned away every time. Eventually, with no amount of money able to feed him or give him a bed, the man in the bearskin took to stealing food from rubbish heaps, sleeping on the outskirts of town and eventually near no towns at all. The human race had become strange and hostile towards him. Not only had his appearance changed dramatically, but his mind as well. Those who spied him, and it was less and less as the years went on, could only describe a hulking shape. Clad in thick bearskin, claws curled at its side, hunched in a feral position. The eyes, however, the eyes people remembered most of all, glinting off at a distance, perhaps at the edge of a campfire, soured by sleepless nights in a hateful yellow. The beady eyes would peer back at a person with equal parts disdain and mistrust, the same way an animal's would.
All right, Dad, that's enough.
Mom, I want to know what happens.
Mara Jean, I said that's enough.
But...
It's all right, Mara. I'm sure your mom knows best. It's late anyway. We can do some more fun things tomorrow. I'll just head in, I think.
Dad, I'm sorry.
It's okay, sweetheart. This old yarn weaver can get a bit carried away sometimes. I'll see you two lovely ladies in the morning. Good night.
Mom, I can't believe you. That was so rude.
Honey, I'm sorry. I didn't think you were ready to hear some creepy old folk tale. Let's just forget about it, okay?
What do you mean I'm not ready? There's more to the story, isn't there?
No, it's just a dumb story. When your grandpa gets some whiskey in him, he'll say all kinds of crazy nonsense.
No, if it has to do with our family, then I want to know.
Mara.
Mom, it's fine. I can take it.
All right. There is more to the story. Luther left his family behind to go off to war and wouldn't return until the last day before the 7 years was over. All that time, his wife Maureen waited and waited. Every evening, she'd look out past the porch of their cabin, out into the vast range ahead of them, hoping to see her husband coming over the ridge, returning home. But he didn't come. She didn't get confirmation of him being killed in battle, and the few other men from their town who had returned home from the war had heard nothing of Luther once the war ended. The months went by, then finally the years. No letter, no word at all. After a time, Maureen just accepted that her husband was never coming back. The child grew, and Maureen worked hard and found various trades to care for the two of them. Suitors came and went, but Maureen never found herself comfortable with a man again. Even after letting Luther go, there was some force that never allowed her to take comfort in the company of men. Once in a great while, she might take a lover, but no satisfaction was to be gained. After some time, she hardly saw or spoke to anyone. The money grew tight, and she and the child were close to being penniless. The night before the 7-year pact would end, a fierce rainstorm kicked up on the plain. Maureen was afraid the cabins might collapse in the gale. The shutters that kept the animals out of the child's room had already flown off. The rain beat against the roof, drowning out any other sound. Maureen stowed the child away and went to repair the shutters over the windows. It was then she looked out the window into the hellish storm outside. Off in the distance, steadily approaching the house through the gloom, was a hulking black shape. Shoulders hunched, great arms lumbering at its sides. Even through the black whirling chaos, Maureen could see the curled talons, hulking dark fur, the breath creating hot clouds of steam. Maureen snatched the rifle from above the mantelpiece and headed outside to the porch. She squared off, aiming carefully through the dark, intent on killing any beast that might attack her or her child. Only feet from the house, the creature let out a mournful bellow, and Maureen squeezed the trigger. The lumbering mass hit the ground, dead. Maureen stepped cautiously over to the carcass, the horrid smell penetrating through the rain. She leaned in and peered over the bare-skinned corpse, rifle steadily trained. And in the moonlight, she spied not the grimacing maw of a bear, but a human face. The face of her husband, Luther. Rolled out in front of the dead monstrosity was a wet leather bag with endless gold coins spilling out into the mud.